man has got something to give, and if a man can change, then a man should live. They sent him to Cook County Jail, a jail known far and wide, where pity was a stranger and brave men often cried. They locked him in the death row to count the days before, till the day they came a-knocking at his door.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. I'm now joined by Laurie Levinson, who holds the David M. Burcham Chair of Ethical Advocacy at the Loyola University School of Law. Prior to joining Loyola Law School, she served for 8 years as an assistant U.S. attorney in Los Angeles. She has written widely on criminal law, focusing both on criminal procedure and on the relationship between the law and the media. Welcome to Background Briefing, Laurie Levinson.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
And, Laurie, it's just extraordinary to learn that this cash-strapped state of California, where teachers are being furloughed and there's an expectation of deeper cuts because, as you know, the budget, governor vetoed the budget that was pretty draconian at any rate. And it presumably will be more so next time around. To think that the state has spent $4 billion so far on the death penalty, and by 2030 will have spent $9 billion with 1,000 people on San Quentin's death row, I'm left with this thought that maybe this will be the beginning of the end of capital punishment. It'll be like nuclear power. It will die a fiscal death as opposed to a moral death.
Well, I think that's quite possible, because I think once the public knows how much the death penalty costs and how little it's actually used, they're going to have to sort of look at it very carefully and say, is it worth it? I mean, we've had 13 executions since we brought the death penalty back to California. That works out to about $300 million per execution. I bet there are other things we could do with that money.
And so how does it compare to the state of Texas, do you know?
Well, the state of Texas is number one in executions, and there have been over 1,200 executions in the country since 1976, and the majority of those are Texas. So Texas does things differently, but here in California, we are currently on a moratorium. We haven't figured out how to have a legal constitutional execution, and yet we keep putting people on death row, and just putting them on death row costs us millions of dollars.
So give us an idea, Laurie Levinson, of why it costs $184 million a year.
Well, it's about 10 to 20 times more expensive to have a death penalty trial than it is an ordinary murder trial. And the reason for that are the protections we put in to make sure that we don't wrongfully convict people, because you know what? We have, and we continue to do so. And so there are two phases to a death penalty case, the guilt phase and the punishment phase. There are daily transcripts, two sets of lawyers, two sets of habeas corpus, automatic appeals to California Supreme Court. Then you have to have a whole new appointment of lawyers. It's a very expensive proposition.
And the study that was just released by the authors, the U.S. Ninth Circuit Judge Arthur Alarcon and Loyola Law School Professor Paula Mitchell, who's a colleague of yours, the title of the study is Executing the Will of the Voters, a Roadmap to Mend or End California Legislators' Multi-Billion Dollar Death Penalty Debacle. Who's the audience in the minds of the authors for this report?
The audience is clearly the voters. I mean, the judge and Paula Mitchell, who is an adjunct professor but also the judge's clerk, spent 3 years doing the research on this. And you need to know that Judge Alarcon himself is not a raging liberal. He's, by and large, a conservative judge. He served as a prosecutor himself. But I think he was very troubled that the public, the voters, had never been given the straight information about the death penalty. All they're ever asked in these initiatives is, do you want to have more death penalty? And the voters click yes. And they have no idea what the cost is and the lack of effectiveness. So this was the goal, to get out in front of the voters the information they need.
And how did they get this information? Because it hasn't been accessible before.
Well, the people who did the studies went ahead and contacted a range of sources, from government sources to defense lawyers who handled death penalty to the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. They scoured the landscape for information on the cost. And even doing that, there were some figures they couldn't get. For example, no one seems to be keeping statistics on just how many death penalty trials we have. We know how many lead to a conviction and an appeal, but we don't even know how many of the cases are out in the California courts.
Well, we know that there are 714 death row prisoners as of this moment, right?
That's right, and we know that it increases all the time. I mean, the great irony in this is that the courts cannot keep up with the flow of death row inmates. So last year, the California Supreme Court, that has to decide all these death penalty appeals, worked at a good clip. They decided 23 cases, but of course we added 33 more inmates to death row. And here's something that's a little scary that comes out of this report. The authors of the report say, you know, it's not just a matter that we have so many people on death row. We actually have people there who have meritorious claims on their appeals. About 70% of the federal petitions are actually successful on some issue. And yet these inmates are dying before the courts can decide their cases.
So why is there then, I guess it's a state issue, right? There's no, because I was very struck recently by Justice Stevens, some of his sort of regrets over the years. One of them was how the death penalty came back. So it's always obviously been a federal issue, but it's handled differently on a state-to-state basis, right?
That's right, because back in the early 70s, the U.S. Supreme Court had an opportunity to strike down the death penalty per se as cruel and unusual punishment. They decided not to do so. Instead, they've been narrowing the category of defendants who are eligible. So now no longer can minors receive the death penalty, and mentally retarded defendants cannot get it. And if you haven't committed a homicide, you can't get it. But we continue to have the death penalty, which means that it's up to the states. And one of the interesting things is as the states look at the cost and they look at the prisons filling up, they're abolishing the death penalty. New Mexico, New Jersey, Illinois all put together commissions and have decided it's not worth it.
And what about looking at the rest of the world? I mean, isn't the United States alone with China and Iran and Saudi Arabia and some very unsavory regimes?
That's absolutely right. In fact, the European Union doesn't let any country in that has the death penalty. So we've been subject to a lot of world criticism because we maintain the death penalty. Now, this article doesn't per se say get rid of the death penalty. It just says take an honest look and think about what the alternatives are. You know, if you want to have the death penalty, maybe you want to narrow it to a very narrow group of crimes where people are killing police officers or multiple murders or killing judges and jurors. But you don't want to have what we currently have in California, which are 33 crimes that are eligible for the death penalty, including things like train wrecking. I mean, as they said, it's just too many with not enough focus on who you actually want to use this costly system for.
Again, I'm speaking with Loyola University Law Professor Laurie Levinson. We're talking about the report just issued authored by the U.S. Ninth Circuit Judge Arthur Alarcon and Loyola Law School Professor Paula Mitchell, Executing the Will of the Voters, a Roadmap to Mend or End the California Legislature's Multi-Billion-Dollar Death Penalty Debacle. And as of now, the death penalty has cost the cash-strapped state of California $4 billion, and by the year 2030, it will have cost $9 billion. But I suppose, Laurie Levinson, you have to surely, doesn't this open up a broader discussion about the price of justice in this case, if indeed justice is the appropriate word? I mean, I spoke the other day to professor in the UC system who's quit in protest at these cuts that the legislature have just enacted on what was once the, you know, a world class university system and the envy of the world, and he was lamenting how much we're cutting education, and how yet in the period that we went from about number one in the country in terms of the state of California's educational system to, I think we're sharing the bottom now with Mississippi. that in this period, the prison industrial complex has grown up, and it's taking the lion's share of the money. So in effect, we are dumbing down our kids, not giving them the education they need. At the same time, we're jailing the poorest of our citizens.
Oh, that's absolutely right. And, you know, the investment we're making to do this more, people have to take a look at. I mean, the governor has said he plans to redo Death Row up at San Quentin, which, by the way, is a prime piece of property if they should ever not use it for the Death Row. So that's going to cost $1 billion in order to redo Death Row. And there are trade-offs. That's what this article says, that the voters, frankly, should know of these trade-offs. And that the voters, since the legislatures really haven't done anything, that the voters should make that decision. They should decide, what do you want to do with this money? Do you want to use it on the death penalty? Or, as you suggested, maybe it's time to invest in education.
So you're a former federal prosecutor, and I think a lot of people are probably getting their legal education from these plethora of TV shows like Law and Orders. You know, now there's one in Los Angeles, by the way. And you often see in these TV shows that the prosecutors use the death penalty as extra leverage, that there is actually some value to that threat. Now, from my point of view, just as a layperson, I would think that given the nature of how brutal the prisons are in this country, and Amnesty International, I think, on a number of occasions has criticized the U.S. prison system on the human rights basis, my understanding is they're pretty hideous places, and you're lucky to come out of there alive. The idea that life imprisonment is not a greater deterrent than the death penalty escapes me.
Well, I don't think there are any studies that actually support a finding that the death penalty is a deterrent. And in fact, I believe it's the ACLU is pushing for a change in terms. Instead of saying that death penalty and life without possibility of parole, why don't we just say death penalty or death in prison? Because eventually these people are going to die in prison. And, you know, in terms of putting it to the voters, when voters are asked, do you want a death penalty? A majority in the country will say yes. But when the question is framed differently, when they're said, question is, would you like life without the possibility of parole? That means no possibility of parole, then they're more eager to choose that option. So it's really how open and intelligent the debate is. And you're right. I mean, these television shows and also politicians, they just talk about the death penalty as a slogan. Let's be tough on crime. They never get into the nitty-gritty of, regardless of whether you like the defendant or not, how does it affect society, what does it cost, what trade-offs are you making?
And what it seems that the only thing that's changed people's mind, those that have supported the death penalty, have been the considerable number of people that have been freed from death row. Because I think the most famous project was out of Northwestern University. I take it it has some problems now, the Innocent Project, because of the actions of somebody involved, which hopefully the messenger won't taint the message, which is often the case. But what's your understanding of how from having been a prosecutor and obviously knowing the federal bench, that argument is persuasive? That you know, you can be for the death penalty, but how could you be for something that is so randomly applied and sometimes misapplied that an innocent person could be executed? And clearly, there's no recourse once you press the button.
Well, I do think that that's a terribly important point, and the public should know that there were many documented cases, well over 100, of people who are actually innocent who ended up facing execution. In fact, we had a very famous case this year, Connick versus Thompson, where the defendant was wrongfully convicted. Prosecutor sat on some exculpatory evidence. He came within days of being executed, and finally he was exonerated. And when you talk about the cost of justice, people have to pause and say, and I did this as a prosecutor too, what is the cost of convicting and then executing an innocent person? That's immeasurable. So there are costs either way that you go. I just think that, you know, on the death penalty here, more knowledge is important. And on the federal side, which you keep mentioning, I think for good reason, they actually have a much more narrow approach to the death penalty. When I was a federal prosecutor, we didn't even have an operative death penalty, and we did our best with the rules and laws that we had. I don't think that we had teeming death crimes that were occurring. They limit it to really the worst of the worst.
But am I correct, Lauren Levinson, in remembering the remarks by the retired Justice Stevens, that he was sort of mystified how, in a way, or caught by surprise that the death penalty didn't go away and that it came back? And I'm curious to know how it came back and what kind of lobbying effort was involved.
Well, I think there's been a pendulum swing. I mean, there was a time when Justice Blackmun said he would no longer tinker with the machinery of death. He says we just can't get it right, no matter how hard we try and how many processes we have. So it looked like then the pattern would be to get rid of the death penalty by chiseling away at certain types of crimes. Frankly, I think it's the political movement, and there has been a strong conservative political movement that said you can't get rid of the death penalty, that's being soft on crime. I think that's actually a false argument. I think you can be very strong on crime. As a prosecutor, I hope I was really tough on crime. That doesn't mean you want to invest $4 billion in a death penalty system that doesn't seem to work.
And seems to be unevenly applied. I mean,
unevenly applied. I mean, one thing we haven't talked about yet is the issue of race. And we know for sure on these studies that if you kill a white person, you're four times more likely to be given execution than if you kill somebody of color. So we are actually devaluing lives. More people of color are disproportionately in the criminal justice system. That's a cost as well.
Well, I thank you for joining us, Lori Levinson, and filling us in on this study and the sticker shock that this cash-strapped state has over the death penalty.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's now take a brief station break. Let me remind you that I was just speaking then with Lori Levinson, who holds the David M. Burkham Chair of Ethical Advocacy at the Loyola University School of Law. Prior to joining Loyola Law School, she served for 8 years as an assistant U.S. attorney in Los Angeles. She has written widely on criminal law, focusing both on criminal procedure and on the relationship between the law and the media. Now we're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the Tea Party's paradise south of the border, Mexico.